Hello? Hello?
Hello, this is Hamburg speaking, Johannes Brunemann und Christian Fleischack.
Hi, Christian.
Hi.
Okay, so we are about to start, okay?
Okay.
So the first transparency is just the title. And so let me go to the second one. And the motivation for this talk has to do with some perplexing aspects of diffeomorphism invariance when it comes to canonical quantum gravity. I should stop for a second and say that if anyone has problems hearing, please let me know. Fortunately, there is no echo, and so please keep your speakers off, except when you speak, when you actually are asking questions. Okay. So at the foundation of loop quantum gravity kinematics, we have the uniqueness theorems, which were proved by Lewandowski, Okolov, Salman, and Thiemann, I guess what now popularly known as the Loss theorem, and independently by our about the same time in a slightly different version by Christian Fleischer. And these theorems roughly say that there is a unique diffeomorphism invariant state on the kinematic algebra, namely the holonomy flux algebra that we use in loop quantum gravity. Of course, I will explain all these terms in a little bit more detail for those who don't know these terms. But this is kind of the backbone of all the kinematics, and we are very used to it. But when it comes to experts in other areas, such as string theory or people working in quantum geometry dynamics, a la Wheeler and DeWitt and so on, they find this very, very perplexing. And this came up particularly in a lot of discussions in the recent workshop at KITP on singularities. The basic reaction is, how can it be that there is a unique state on the kinematic algebra? For example, in quantum geometry dynamics, we have states of the type psi of the metric, Q is a metric, is equal to some function of this Ricci curvature scalar integrated on the spatial manifold. And so surely quantum gravity should admit such infinitely many diffeomorphism invariant states. And so there is a perception that perhaps this uniqueness is a peculiarity of the connection framework that we use in loop quantum gravity. There are a bunch of related questions which say that, well, if there's a unique state on the kinematical algebra of loop quantum gravity, then is it also true on the kinematic algebra of gauge theories? And if it is not true, one doesn't expect it to be true, because we think that there are many, infinitely many gauge invariant states in the Maxwell, on the Maxwell algebra, for example. Then why not? What is the difference between diffeomorphism invariance and the internal gauge invariance? Is this uniqueness tied to the non-abelian character of the diffeomorphism group, which is not shared by the Maxwell theory? If so, is there a difference between the abelian and non-abelian gauge theories in this respect of whether they admit a diffeomorphism invariant state and a unique one or none at all or infinitely many? The second set of related questions is that the representation that we use in loop quantum gravity, which of course predates these uniqueness theorems, that representation has many features which are unusual. The kinematic and Hilbert space is non-separable, and the connection, there is no operator corresponding to the connection itself. We have operator corresponding to holonomy alone. So the question is, are these somehow related to the diffeomorphism invariance? And if so, would this feature also persist in quantum geometry dynamics? Next transparency. So the goal of this talk is to clarify these issues And I think it's mainly pedagogical. I hope that this will help all of us when we discuss loop quantum gravity with experts from string theory or quantum geometry dynamics or any other area. But also, there are a few new mathematical problems that might delight at least a few of the audience, and they may want to think about these problems that will come up. Some of them, I think, are relatively straightforward. Some of them are a little bit more tricky. So my presentation will be pedagogical, so I apologize to the experts, but I know that there are many new students and postdocs and so on who may not know the material that the experts know. And also, I will skip some technicalities, not too many, but a few. And the primary focus will be really on conceptual issues. And for concreteness, just to simplify the discussion, I will focus on the work, on the LOST framework rather than Fleischack's framework. The conclusion is basically that the diffeomorphism invariance requirement on states on the kinematical algebra is really extremely strong, not just for quantum for loop quantum gravity, as has been shown by this theorem, but also, for example, for quantum geometry dynamics. And the diffeomorphism invariance requirement is very different from the gauge invariance requirement. And there is not much difference between abelian and non-abelian gauge series in this respect. In both cases, there actually are many gauge invariant states. And finally, the infinitely many states that people usually think about, which are supposed to be diffeomorphism invariant for quantum gravity, they do exist, but they are states on a different algebra, not on the kinematical algebra that we are considering here. So the organization of the talk is, first I will tell you a little bit of a general framework. Again, these are preliminaries. Then I will turn to quantum geometry dynamics, kind of the standard treatment, and investigate this issue of whether there are diffeomorphism invariant states and how many there are. Then I will summarize loop quantum gravity situation. And then I will revisit quantum geometry dynamics from what we learned from loop quantum gravity. Then I will talk about gauge versus diffeomorphism invariance, and then I will summarize. Next, transparency.
Hello.
So the general framework is as follows. We are going to use canonical approach, a la Dirac or a la BRST. And in this approach, we first have to construct a kinematical framework. And this framework is going to be the home for the quantum constraint operator, or BRST charges. So we'll have a kinematical Hilbert space on which quantum constraints would be well-defined operators, and then we want to solve quantum constraints. That is to say, in appropriate sense, look for the kernel of this operator. So there are three steps. First, we start with a certain star algebra, A, little a, which is generated by a canonically conjugate operator of the theory. We ignore constraints, and we just look at the basic phase space variables and construct a star algebra. And then the next step is to find a representation of this A, that is to say, represent the elements of A by operators on a certain Hilbert space, and this is the kinematical Hilbert space. The next step is representing the constraints by self-adjoint operators so that the gauge transformations, the finite transformations that are generated by the constraints, they become unitary operators on the Hilbert space. And finally, we want to pass the physical Hilbert space, for example, by group averaging. For this talk, really, I'm going to be talking, restricting primarily on the first of these three steps, but the solution to the first step, namely how you find the representation of the algebra, is motivated by what we want to do with the representation of that algebra, namely the fact that we want the transformation generated by the constraints to be unitary. Now, a royal road, so to say, to obtain a representation of such algebra is a famous construction given by Gelfand, Niemack, and Siegel almost 50 years ago. So let me summarize this construction in the next transparency. So this is a very very simple in a way, construction. It can be taught to kind of first-year graduate students. But it is very powerful, and it forms basis of a lot of constructions also in rigorous quantum field theory. So, I mean, one of the problems when you discuss this whole subject with people outside loop quantum gravity is that they always think of states as elements of the Hilbert space. But in this case, we do not begin with the Hilbert space. As I said in the last transparency, what we have is really an algebra of operators constructed from the classical phase space, from the canonical variables in the classical phase space. And our job is to construct a Hilbert space. So the first point is that there is a slightly general notion of state without a notion of a Hilbert space. What you are given is just an algebra, and a state, F, is a positive linear functional on this algebra. So you can vaguely think of this, if you like, intuitively, as an expectation value function. But of course, this is a correct interpretation only after we have the Hilbert space, after we have the representation. To begin with, a state is just a function on the algebra. That means given any element of the abstract operator in the algebra, f of a of that element, f of a, little a, is a complex number such that it is linear in the obvious sense. F of a plus lambda b is equal to f of a plus lambda times f of b, where a and b are elements of the algebra, abstract operators, and lambda is a complex number. By convention, the positive linear functional operating on the identity should give us 1. And finally, and most importantly, we have the positivity requirement, which says that the function operating on elements of the type A star A, little a is an element, any element of the algebra, and therefore, if you have an operator of the type A star A, then the function should give us a non-negative number. So the question is, how do you define star? So the algebra itself comes with a star, and in the concrete example that we'll see, I will explain how this is actually comes. In ordinary quantum mechanics, for example, we just begin by declaring that the basic operators are going to be Q and P, and we just declare that Q star is equal to Q, P star is equal to P, and then we spread this star relation on the sums of complex linear combinations of P's and Q's and on the products of P's and Q's by the familiar properties of the star operation. So there is no Hilbert space. The star operation is defined abstractly, just like the algebra is defined abstractly. So given, next point in Brown, given any such positive linear functional, the GNS construction provides a Hilbert space H and a representation of the algebra by operators on H. And this representation has the following nice features. The first is that the representation is what is called cyclic. That means that there is a preferred vector psi sub f. Mathematically, it is often referred to as vacuum, although physically it may not be the vacuum state, may not be the ground state of the Hamiltonian. So there is a state psi f such that if you take that state and operate by the elements of the algebra repeatedly, then you obtain a dense subspace of that Hilbert space. So the construction gives us a Hilbert space, and that Hilbert space has a fiducial vector, which a construction tells you how to construct, psi sub f, and the Hilbert space is, roughly speaking, generated by repeated actions of the algebra on this fiducial state. And finally, in this representation, the function that we begin with is precisely the expectation value in the fiducial state psi of f. So this, I'm not explaining to you how the construction actually occurs. I'm just telling you a fact. It's not a difficult thing. It can be done in maybe half an hour or 40 minutes, including all the detailed proofs. So where is the construction? Now, this is a very general procedure. One might say, well, this method will only give us representation which is cyclic. Isn't that a restriction? But for example, every irreducible representation of the algebra is automatically cyclic, because in every irreducible representation, you can start with any state and operate repeatedly by the algebra and obtain the whole Hilbert space. So cyclic is actually weaker than irreducible representation. The second nice property of this GNS construction is the following. Supposing you are given theta, which is an automorphism on the algebra, which means just a structure-preserving mapping from the algebra to itself. So, for example, diffeomorphisms or gauge transformations will give us automorphisms on the algebra of our operators for quantum gravity and for gauge theories. So if you are given such an automorphism on the algebra, and if in fact we happen to choose a positive linear functional, which is invariant under the automorphism, which means I can take an operator A and operate on it by this automorphism, get a new operator, and evaluate the positive linear functional, the expectation value functional of that operator. The number should be the same as the expectation value of the positive linear functional evaluated on the old operator. So if our positive linear functional has this simple property, then we're automatically guaranteed that this automorphism is going to be unitarily implemented. And furthermore, so that next line is the statement, that what does it mean to say it is unitarily implemented? It means there exists a unitary operator, U sub theta, of the Hilbert space, such that theta operating on A is the same as U to the minus 1 A times U on this Hilbert space. And furthermore, the fiducial Hilbert space, fiducial state psi f that we have, is left invariant by this unitary operator. This is a powerful and economical way to ensure the gauge symmetries, for example, the gauge symmetries of Maxwell theory or diffeomorphism symmetries of Einstein theory or any other background independent theory. So it's an economical way to ensure that these gauge symmetries are unitarily implemented in the quantum framework. And this is what we wanted in order to implement the constraints. We wanted a unitary representation of the transformations generated by the constraint. In Minkowskian field theories, where we do not necessarily have gauge, but we have symmetries, for example, Poincaré symmetries, then one typically starts out by constructing the algebra, showing that the Poincaré group acts by automorphisms on this algebra, and then choosing the positive linear functional to be invariant under these automorphisms, and that gives us a vacuum state, which is then invariant. The fiducial state is invariant under these Poincaré transformations, and the Poincaré group acts by unitary transformations on the whole Hilbert space. Next transparency. Okay. Let me take any questions that you may have on the general framework. Okay. So if there are no questions, let me go on to quantum geometry dynamics. So we want to apply these ideas to quantum geometry dynamics. So in quantum geometry dynamics, the basic canonically conjugate pair consists of a three-metric QAB and a canonically conjugate momentum PAB. So we got operators. We take QAB and you smear it by test function. For those you know, this has to be a density of weight 1. And we obtain operator Q hat of F. And similarly, we take a test function GAB and smear it with P hat AB, and we obtain an operator P hat of G. So this is a basic canonically conjugate operators, and their sums and products generate the algebra, but the algebra then is subject to some conditions. And the conditions are the canonical commutation relations, Q hat of F with P hat of G, is given by the right-hand side, which just says really that Q hat, if I had looked at them in an unsmeared way, they satisfy the canonical commutation relations with delta distribution on the right-hand side. And then the answer to the previous question, how do we know what star operation means? Well, we declare that Q hat of F is its own star, P hat of G is its own star. Then we ask that the star operation be antilinear. That is to say, if I take two operators A and B, and if I take a complex linear combination, A plus lambda B, then star of this must be A star plus lambda bar times B star, where lambda bar is complex conjugate, and we just declare that the star operation must satisfy the involutive, that is to say, A star should be equal to 1, and AB whole star should be the same as B star A star. With these conditions, the star operation is then defined on the whole algebra. So we get an abstract star algebra, and on this star algebra, each diffeomorphism alpha operates naturally. Because, first of all, the diffeomorphism acts naturally on this pair FG of test fields. These test fields are just functions on the spatial manifold. Everything I'm going to say today is valid in arbitrary number of dimensions, although occasionally I'll slip to three plus one dimensions.
One,
yeah, there's one question.
The operator 2 has AB and 3 has AB. These are, there are infinite number of operators corresponding to each spatial point.
So Q hat AB is an operator value distribution. So the question is, are there infinitely many operators corresponding to Q hat AB of X? Yes. So, non-precisely, in a very, very heuristic sense, you can say that there is an operator at each point. But more precisely, the statement is that Q hat AB of X and P hat AB of X are operator value distributions, which means given test functions, you can smear them and obtain operators. The fact that your arbitrary test functions tells you that there are infinitely many operators. Now, given any diffeomorphism alpha, it acts naturally on this pair, and that induces then an automorphism on the algebra in the obvious fashion. The automorphism theta sub alpha induced by the diffeomorphism alpha operating on, for example, Q hat of F is just the Q hat operator associated with the diffeomorphism operated on the test function, and similarly for P hat and products of these. So there's a natural, this is automorphism because the canonical commutation relations and the star relations do not use any background fields. As a side remark, Clauder quite rightly has criticized this algebra because with this algebra, you cannot guarantee that the Q hat AB of X will be a positive definite operator value distribution. And we would like, or some people would like, this condition to be retained in quantum theory. And so he, instead of using P hat AB, he has chosen another variable, which is, I should call it pi tilde AB. And pi tilde AB is just P hat ABC times QBC, as I have written down up here. And then the basic variables are just pi and Q. And then you get an algebra in which Q with Q is 0, pi with Q is Q, and pi with pi is a pi, with delta distributions all over the place. And with this algebra, this algebra is compatible with the condition that the metric is positive definite. I will comment on this algebra at the end. For my purposes, most results don't change, and there are some stronger results for this algebra, so I will just comment on them as time goes on. So to obtain a diffeomorphism covariant representation, let us suppose that the algebra admits a diffeomorphism invariant positive linear functional. So functional, which is such that if I take this automorphism theta sub alpha, then the value of the F on the new operator is the same as the value of the F on the old operator A. Then by the GNS construction, we would obtain a desired representation of A in which diffeomorphism acts unitarily. So the question now is, how many such positive linear functionals do we have? There's one more question.
When you start talking about diffeomorphism, is diffeomorphism on the C space? Are you only talking about the coordinate transformation or the spatial part?
Right. So this is the canonical theory, Hamiltonian theory. Our operators are all defined on the spatial manifold, which may be n-dimensional, and in 3 plus 1 theory, it is three-dimensional. So these are all, because we're talking the phase space language, these diffeomorphisms refer to just space. So now we've got quantum geometrodynamics, and now we talk about diffeomorphism invariant states on this algebra. So now, first notice that I take this positive linear functional and evaluate it on the smeared operator Q hat of F. by linearity, there must exist now not an operator, but an ordinary distribution QAB, such that the result is of the type QAB times S tilde AB of X D3X. So this positive linear functional, if you like the expectation value of QAB, Q hat AB, defines a certain distribution which I call capital QAB of X. Similarly, I can take products of these operators Q hat, or if you like, I can take products of operator value distribution at two different points, Q hat AB of X and Q hat CD of Y, I can take, or X prime, I can take two such things. And then the positive linear functional or the expectation value functional defines for you a distribution of the type QAB A prime B prime XX prime, where AB indices sit at the point X and A prime B prime sit at the point X prime, etc. So we obtain all these distributions. But now all these distributions must be diffeomorphism invariant because the positive linear functional F is by assumption diffeomorphism invariant. And the proof is in the next brown line. I will go through it quickly. It's a very trivial thing. I take the positive linear functional and operate it on Q hat smear with a diffeomorphism operating on F. That must be equal to the same as the positive linear functional operating on Q hat of F. This tells me that capital QAB operating this distribution, operating on alpha times S tilde AB, should be the same as its action on S tilde AB. And this should be true for all S tilde AB. This just tells us for all S tilde AB and for all diffeomorphisms alpha. And this tells us that the QAB of X, this distribution, should be diffeomorphism invariant. This is the definition of the distribution being diffeomorphism invariant. And now is the next point. I'm going through it excruciatingly slowly here because people might be confused pretty soon. The next point is that forget about quantum gravity. Just think about it and forget about physics, in fact. Just think about it mathematically. You're given some n-dimensional manifold and you are asked to find tensor distribution, no density weight, tensor distribution QAB of X, QAB A prime B prime of X prime, etc., which are supposed to be diffeomorphism invariant. The only such distributions is a zero tensor distribution. So QAB should be equal to zero, QAB A prime B prime should be equal to zero, etc. But now we go back to our positive linear functional and the Galifianakis-Siegel construction. If QAB A prime B prime XX prime is equal to zero, that tells us that the positive linear functional operating on Q hat AB of F times Q hat AB of F must be zero, because this was exactly on the top point in blue. You can see that S operating on Q hat AB of little f times Q hat AB of F prime defines for us this distribution. If this distribution is zero, then this expectation value would also be zero. So we conclude that F operating on Q hat of F times Q hat of little f should be equal to zero. But this is exactly the expectation value of the operator Q hat of F squared. But construction, Q hat of F is self-adjoint, is its own star. Therefore, this is just equal to Q hat of norm of Q hat of F operating on psi. So we conclude that Q hat of F operating on psi should be equal to zero for all F. Completely analogous reasoning tells us that P hat of G operating on psi of F must also be zero for all test fields G. But now this contradicts the canonical commutation relation, because if I take the canonical commutation relation and operate it on psi of F, on the right left-hand side, I will get zero because either P hat or Q hat operates on it. And on the right-hand side, I have an identity, so I just get I H bar times psi of F. And so I got a contradiction, which will say the psi of F is equal to zero, for example, but psi of F cannot be equal to zero because when operating on identity, it gives us one. So the conclusion is that the standard algebra A of quantum geometry dynamics does not admit a single diffeomorphism invariant state. This is completely opposite of the naive expectation that I started out by saying in the first transparency, most people would say, oh, there are many, infinitely many diffeomorphisms in a variance state. Take any function of the type integral of some curvature invariant and integrate on the three manifold. These do not define in diffeomorphism invariant state on the kinematical algebra. So rather than infinitely many diffeomorphisms invariant state, there are none. And the situation is really the same with a more sophisticated affine algebra of Clouder.
I have a question.
Yes, please.
Laurent.
Yeah.
So here, one of the key assumptions is the linearity of the state. Is it the case that the initial state you considered, for the argument that there could be many, are essentially, states which are not linear in the metric? That is, if I take a functional which depends on Q, but via the Riemann tensor, I could overcome this argument somehow.
So the statement is, what algebra do you want to start out with? And I'll comment on this in the discussion situation. And the statement here is that, well, with everybody in quantum geometry dynamics starts out with the algebra which is generated by the canonically conjugate pairs. So the statement is always related to a certain algebra, and Laura, you're completely right. It is because we're starting out with this particular algebra, the statement is about this algebra. Somebody could construct some other algebra, but then they would have to construct this algebra explicitly, justify that this is a good algebra to consider, and then look for states on this algebra. Okay.
So you're saying I could, let's say, start with an algebra generated by the curvature, for instance.
It's tricky because you'll have to start with this algebra generated by curvature.
Yeah.
If you don't have metric, then I don't know how to raise and lower indices.
Yeah.
The metric would also have to be an operator. The construction of such an algebra is a very difficult problem.
Okay, but is it possible to encode this choice of different algebra in lifting the conditions of linearity of the GNAS state with respect to the canonical variable and asking for a more general condition? Is that
no. You're right. So construct a completely different algebra, and then that algebra will admit some interesting diffeomorphism invariant state. That's absolutely right. And that's what happens in loop quantum gravity, as we'll see in a minute.
Okay.
So now I come to the kind of next part of the talk, which is loop quantum gravity. Now, in loop quantum gravity, the basic canonical pair is A and E. And for simplicity now onwards, I'm going to drop hats on the operator. And we're going to construct an algebra. We could construct an algebra A naively. We've got a connection with the SU2 connection A and the canonically conjugate, quote-unquote, electric fields or density-weighted triads, E. And so I could just smear them with test fields, as is shown here, A of F and F is missing here, and E of F. If I did that, then again, the same argument that I gave will tell us that there is no diffeomorphism invariant state. And exactly what Laura told us just now is that this is associated, is directly related to the way that I have constructed the algebra, which is actually linear in this F up here, which is a canonically conjugate variable that we got up here. So instead, what we do is to construct the loop quantum gravity algebra. Now, the letter that denotes it is really Gothic A, but it looks more like U, so I'm going to, in order not to confuse people, I'm going to call it U. Okay. So I got loop quantum gravity algebra U, and it is generated by gauge invariant holonomies. And these holonomies, as you know, are exponentials of the connection, and the smearing function F is replaced by the form factor, if you like, of this edge E. And this appears in the exponent, and therefore, this linearity that we had before that Laura was asking about is no longer true. For the electric fluxes, we still keep linearity. I'm sorry, I got all these typos. Electric flux should be ES of F on the left-hand side is given by integral of E tilde times F. So this is like what we're doing with the momentum operator previously. But this is the algebra that we use, except that the electric fields are smeared on one co-dimensional surface. So if you are doing 3 plus 1 theory, then spatial manifold is 3-dimensional, and the electric fields are smeared on 2-dimensional. Now, physically, this algebra is really directly useful only in the spatial compact case. In the asymptotically flat case, you would have to put suitable boundary conditions, which have not been incorporated in this algebra so far in a satisfactory manner. The same thing with asymptotically anti-de Sitter case. So although I'm not explicitly requiring spatially compact case, physically, the content of this loss theorem and so on is really applicable directly to the spatially compact case. So, but now with this algebra, the situation is very different, precisely because of the point that Laurent was raising. The loss theorem implies that there is a unique SU2 gauge and diffeomorphism invariant state. So, how is this state obtained? Well, let me just give you the final answer. So we've got two kinds of operators. We've got configuration operators, which are all build-up connections, or more precisely, out of holonomies of connections. So the general configuration operator is of the following type. C of A is the configuration operator, which depends only on A and does not depend on E. That's all I mean by C of A, that it depends only on A. So this operator is really depends only on holonomies of A along a finite number of edges. And so you give me this group element, say n edges, so n group elements, and you consider any function of this group element. And that is to say, we consider an element of the space cylindrical functions of the connection, basically. And these are configuration operators. Configuration operators are just certain functions of the connection, which are of the type, you take the connection, you consider the holonomies they generate along some edges, and then you obtain n group elements, and then you take a little c, which is a function on n copies of group, which is a function of g to the n, which is mapping on g to the n to complex numbers, where g is SU2 in our case. And then the positive linear functional does the obvious thing. What it does is, given a configuration operator, it just takes this function on n variables and just integrates it with respect to the Haar measure on the n copies of group. So what I told you what the positive linear functional does on the configuration variables, what does it do on the rest of the operator? Well, the rest of the operators are all of the type some operator A in the algebra multiplied by the electric field smeared operator E. And the positive linear functional just sends all these operators to zero. Now, it is not obvious from the transparency that this is a positive linear functional, but it is. And in fact, this was introduced much before the uniqueness theorem was proved, almost 10 years before that. And this positive linear functional is manifestly gauge invariant and diffeomorphism invariant because we did not use any background structure. Next transparency. So I just want to elucidate some properties of this representation. The Hilbert space that you have got can be written as a space of square integral functions on the space of generalized connections. So classically, the space of connections is some infinite dimensional space, but quantum mechanically, the quantum configuration space is an enlargement of that, and that space is called A bar. And we have very good understanding of this space. And this L2 space is with respect to some measure. Now, this is not a formal measure, as is often done in the particle physics literature. But this really is a regular diffeomorphism invariant Borel measure on this this quantum configuration space. I think most people in loop quantum gravity know about this very well. They work with this all the time. So I'll not spend much more time on this. Now, H carries a natural unitary action of the symmetry group, and the symmetry group is the diffeomorphism group, but it's really a semi-direct product of the local gauge group with the diffeomorphism group. Both of them operate. The SU2 locally generated by the Gauss constraint, and diffeomorphism is generated by the vector constraint, out of diffeomorphism constraint. And this fact that there is a unitary action is used critically in solving the Gauss and diffeomorphism constraints by group averaging. Now note that only finite diffeomorphism induce automorphisms on our algebra, and these are unitarily implemented on the Hilbert space. Infinitism and diffeomorphisms had no natural action on the algebra, because to talk about the action of a vector field, a lead derivative of the field, so to say, we will need some topology on the algebra, and U is not equipped with the necessary topology. And if one were to expect it, equip it with a suitable topology, and so that the limits exist, then the algebra U would be enlarged, and my expectation is that on this enlarged space, there will be no diffeomorphism invariant state either. But of course, this enlargement is not easy to carry out, so, you know, this is just a general remark at this stage. The last point is blue. So what we are doing is really using these holonomies instead of the connections. The E's are still, they're smeared, the momenta, the triads are smeared, they're smeared on a lower dimensional surface, but they're still kind of distributions as they were in quantum geometry dynamics. But the big difference is that we used exponentiated connections, which are cage covariant, rather than the connection in themselves. This serves two purposes. One is the obvious one that we know from gauge theory, namely it makes the algebra SU2 gauge covariant. But more importantly, as I commented on the last transparency, if we had stuck with the connection and the electric field and smeared them out by themselves, then again we would find that there is no diffeomorphism invariant state. But now, Lost and Fleischack tell us that there is actually a non-trivial diffeomorphism invariant state, and in fact, it's unique. Next transparency. So let me just tell you quickly what the underlying structure is, because this would be slightly useful in the next topic. The algebra U, as I was telling you before, has an abelian configuration path, which I call SIL. It is just functions which are of the type CFA is equal to little c, of n group elements, the n group elements being the holonomies. This algebra can be completed in a soup norm to yield an abelian C star algebra, which we call SIL bar. Now the mechanics of this representation can be heuristically, or not heuristically, precisely, but intuitively understood as follows. You see, if we just forget about the momenta for a minute and just look at the configuration algebra, then there is a powerful theory due to Gelfand, which tells us that any cyclic representation of this SIL bar has a property that the Hilbert space is a space of square integral functions on this A bar, quantum configuration space I mentioned, with respect to some measure mu, and the operators, the configuration operators, just act by multiplication. And this representation is diffeomorphism invariant if and only if the measure we choose is diffeomorphism invariant. So we could, abstractly, start with just this abelian algebra and look for the representation. Then we can ask, how many diffeomorphism invariant measures are there on this A bar? And there are lots of measures. John Baez in particular wrote down a whole slew of them. But the key achievement of the Lost theorem is to show that there is only one of them, this mu AL, which supports the representation of the momentum algebra. So configuration space itself may have lots of measures, but there's only one which supports the expectation, the representation of the momentum algebra. And technically, this is very subtle. In particular, in order to prove this result, they had to make use of what they call the semi-analytical category. And if there are questions, we can have a discussion about it at the very end. And that plays a key role. That is what sort of made everything mathematically natural and everything fits together very elegantly. And so they really had to sort of search for this. And I know that Hanno has really worked on it concentratedly for a long time and refining things slowly. And the culmination of the effort was really the Lost theorem with this semi-analytical category. Now, this theorem is similar to the uniqueness theorem of the Poincaré invariant vacuum for free Minkowskian quantum field theory. But the interesting thing is that here, there is no assumption on the details of dynamics at all. This is really just a result which comes out of kinematical symmetry. Next transparency. Oh, sorry. Yeah, next transparency. I just want to quickly tell you contrast with the quantum geometry dynamics of the last part that we just saw. So why does U of loop quantum gravity admit a diffeomorphism in a variant state while the algebra of quantum geometry dynamics does not? Well, this again, I'm repeating the key point that was raised by Laurent already. The loop quantum gravity algebra is generated by holonomies rather than by smear connection itself. And this, if you look at what happens to the holonomies, then you find that F operating on a single holonomy operator associated with an edge will be equal to zero if the edge is non-trivial, and that is a regular edge, and is one if the edge is just a point edge, you know, just single point, so to say. And F is diffeomorphism invariant, but as you can see from here, it is really discontinuous in the edge. Because as you shrink the edge to zero, F operating on that holonomy will give you 0, 0, 0, 0 until the end when you suddenly obtain 1. And because of this, we cannot define an operator value distribution A of X of this Hilbert space by taking weak limits of the holonomy operator. Next point in brown. In fact, the operator, the connection operator of A of X can, as an operator value distribution, cannot be defined at all on the Hilbert space, assuming that it commutes with H. You can show that. So the diffeomorphism invariance of F and the fact that the F has this particular property implies that if the operator value distribution could be defined, it had to be identically zero operator value distribution. So the difference is really that here, in this representation, there is no operator value distribution A of X, and this came out of really the diffeomorphism invariance very directly. And the quantum geometry dynamic algebra, the last point on this transparency, is analogous to the algebra generated by A and E. And as I mentioned, this algebra also doesn't admit a diffeomorphism invariant state. So the natural question then is, can we use an exponentiated algebra in quantum geometry dynamics? And this brings me to the fourth point, which is quantum geometry dynamics revisited. So in this case, we don't have connections, so we don't have notion of holonomy. But what we can do is we can just use the exponentiated version of the old operators, and they are called the Weyl operators. So I can just define W associated with test functions f and g to be exponential of I, q of f plus p of g. So now I'm going to say that W's are well defined and forget about q and p. And q, this is how, this is the first, this equation is just the motivation. But now we just deal with W's, and these W's satisfy the Weyl commutation relations, which really just says that W of F1 and F2 multiplied by W of F2 and FG2 is equal to a phase factor times W of F1 plus F2 and G1 plus G2. Because the products are written just again, is again a Weyl operator, therefore the whole algebra is just a linear combination of these Weyl operators. And therefore, to define a positive linear functional, it suffices to say what the positive linear functional does on any, on all Weyl operators, because by linearity, then it extends to the whole algebra. And now we can define a diffeomorphism invariant function along the lines of loop quantum gravity. We can say that the F operator W of F and G is equal to 1 if G is equal to 0 and 0 otherwise. This representation is, this function F is continuous in F because independent of what F does, right? It doesn't depend on what F does. But it is not continuous in G. If I take G and slowly take it to 0, I will obtain, first of all, if G is not 0, I'll obtain 0, 0, 0, but in the limit, I will obtain the value 1. So consequently, on the GNS Hilbert space, the operator Q of F are well defined because it is continuous in F, but P of G are not well defined. So I can take So to say, I have this while operator, I can take a derivative to obtain Q of F, but if I try to take the derivative with respect to G, I don't get anything which is well defined. This is analogous to the fact that in loop quantum gravity, the electric field operators are well defined, but A operators, the connection operators, are not well defined. Now, in our case, in loop quantum gravity, we had holonomies. I mean, because we had a connection, it was obvious that we should exponentiate the holonomy. There is no reason to exponentiate the electric field. I mean, we can exponentiate it, and that's what Fleischack does, for example, but it is not necessary. But in this case, really, the while operators don't really prefer Q or P, so we could have, for example, chosen a positive linear functional, which is equal to 1 if F is equal to 0 and 0 otherwise. So there is an obvious dual representation in which then P would be well-defined, but the metric operator would not be well-defined. I chose this because in geometry dynamics, everybody wants metric to be a well-defined operator value distribution. So in the quantum geometry dynamics representation, however, you can again show this resulting representation that Q of F operating on psi, the fiducial vector, is equal to 0. This is exactly what happened in loop quantum gravity for the electric flux operator. There's a cyclic state in both representations, in loop quantum gravity and QGD representation, corresponds to zero metric. And this is very reminiscent of the 2 plus 1 gravity, for example, a la Witten. By the way, this representation is again unsuitable for Claudius affine algebra because QAB does exist as a distribution, but it fails to be positive definite, and that is a cornerstone of Claudius' program. The features of this QGD representation. The Gelfand theory applies again. Again, the Hilbert space will be given by L2 of Q times d mu naught, where Q is some completion of the space of smooth quantum metrics, so it will be the quantum configuration space. And the Gelfand spectrum, and its mathematical characterization is that it is a Gelfand spectrum of the abelian algebra of configuration operators. And mu naught is a regular Borel measure. Structure of Q can again be explored using positive projective techniques, as we did for structure of A bar in LQG. But it's not as in LQG, it is not a standard distribution space that you can look up in textbooks. And I don't have an explicit control on the integration theory. We know that the measure exists and all that, but I can't immediately tell you the answers. I mean, you can work out any answer, but there's no complete control. In this representation, the diffeomorphism group does have unitary actions. But again, infinitesimal diffeomorphisms are not defined either on the Weyl algebra W nor on the Hilbert space. So it's again exactly as in loop quantum gravity. The classical generator of infinitesimal diffeomorphism along VA, which is Lee V of QAB PAB, well, it's clearly not defined because there is no operator corresponding to PAB. But even if there were an operator, we still would have to regularize this product. It's a very complicated problem, and I think it's going to be very tough. So the same problem with the algebra of constraints as in loop quantum gravity, because if the infinitesimal generator is not obviously defined, then the right-hand side of the scalar constraint of itself, which involves this infinitesimal generator, is again going to have the same problem. So the Hilbert space is again non-separable as in loop quantum gravity, and again, this seems to be a general feature of the GNS representations arising from diffeomorphism invariant positive linear function. So nice mathematical result would be some precise results along this line. Now in the spatially compact case, second question is, does W admit any diffeomorphism invariant states other than F and its obvious dual? I do not know the answer. The major difficulty in quantum geometry dynamics would be, again, constraint operators, but there are also other difficulties. The scalar constraint in quantum geometry dynamics looks like PP times the Wheeler-DeWitt metric, which is a density, times square root of Q times R. R is the scalar curvature. This is significantly harder than in loop quantum gravity because of four reasons. First, we no longer can treat curvature in terms of basic operators like holonomies. curvature will have to be constructed out of the basic operator Q. It is non-polynomial in Q, and therefore life is going to be somewhat difficult. The GABCD, which involves a square root of the metric and products of metric operators, that would, it contains products of this operator value distribution and has to be regularized. There's no obvious Riemann trick that one can use here. I don't mean that somebody cannot invent one, but the obvious things don't work. And PAB, as we know, they themselves do not exist as operator value distributions. And most importantly, the discreteness, which plays a key role in loop quantum gravity, a la Riemann, doing this constraint a la theorem, is not now available because PABs are smeared with three-dimensional test fields and not with lower-dimensional ones. And I'll comment on this in the last point, on this transparency. There's also no natural or obvious strategy to characterize solutions to the diffeomorphism constraint. If I follow this strategy, and as Laura was saying, one may want to change algebra in the very first step, but these are the kinds of algebra that people have always used in the canonical quantum geometry dynamics program. Wheeler, Carol Kukash, Chris Isham, and the modified version due to Clouder, etc., etc. Now, it is unlikely that states of the type that we consider, functions of the curvature, will result from group averaging. Because what happens from group averaging is basically we average the smearing functions. And indeed, it's not clear to me that the group average Hilbert space is large enough. It may be too small to be useful. In the loop quantum gravity, we're averaging these edges or graphs, and then we get spin networks and diffeomorphism classes of spin networks. Here, we would have to consider diffeomorphism classes of the smearing fields with respect to which we smear QAB, with respect to which we smear P. And that is not going to be, the diffeomorphism equivalence classes, I think, are not going to be a large enough space, but I do not know for sure. So in red, is a nice mathematical question. And finally, forgetting about constraints, even quantum geometry seems rather unmanageable in this representation because Q hat of F will be well defined, but three-dimensional smearing implies that the discreteness underlying the polymer geometry of loop quantum gravity is lost. It's a lot of regularity came, for example, in the definition of area operator or triad operators, volume operators, etc. So let me say about triad or the area operator. A lot of simplification arise because we've got this polymer geometry, which came directly because we smeared the connections along one dimension, and these one-dimensional polymers intersect two-dimensional surfaces in isolated points, and we use that critically in order to get both discreteness of the spectra of operators, but also defining the operators themselves, quote-unquote, quantization of the geometric operators. And that is going to be extremely difficult here, and I do not know even if it is possible. So there's a nice mathematical problem. Is it possible? Okay. So let me just stop for 2 minutes and before going to the last part, which is last technical part, which is gauge invariance. Are there any comments or questions?
Could you repeat the issue with the curvature and the
RMR? Okay. So let's go back to the transparency, which has to do with major difficulty on the top. And the question is about the second point in blue. And I was asked to repeat the statement I make here that it is unlikely that states like integral of some function of curvature, d3x, will result from group averaging. Well, if we start with the kinematical Hilbert space and we group average, we obtain only certain kinds of states. For example, in loop quantum gravity, this group averaging doesn't give us immediately the state of the kind that Stefan is asking the question that Stefan likes, which is, for example, the Chern-Simons state. It's exactly the same thing here, that these states would be like Chern-Simons states, if you like, and they would not result from a group averaging procedure. Even topological things. I mean, what will appear, what will come, is really things which are associated with diffeomorphism in equivalence classes of the analogs of edges, and the analogs of edges now would be the equivalence classes of the smearing functions associated with the momenta. I think I call them G, the smearing function G.
Hello?
Yeah.
Bye, this is Carlo.
Hi, Carlo.
Hi. Just a silly question. I've much appreciated the clarification, especially the role of continuity in what you've said. In the last part of what you've said, you spend a lot of time to explain how things are different with geometrodynamic variables and the problems which are there. So my question is simply, this is useful for clarification, but on the other hand, my reaction was, why would anybody use those variables? The question is that, are you referring in specific to some use of some attempts to go back to geometrodynamic variables now or something like that?
No, I think this really is because of questions. I mean, you know, other people always ask these questions. So it's good to know that, well, look, I mean, if you did that, there are many, many problems that they will have to solve. I'm not saying that we should necessarily solve all these problems, although there are people in our community who are much more mathematical, who like just mathematical challenges by themselves. And so as an amusing thing, I think one can do these things. It is not my intuition that much progress would happen if one actually continued along this program in geometrodynamics. Is really, many discussions came up, and Ted Jacobson and so on would ask this question, but, you know, why can't you do this? So it's good to have, when we talk to various people, it's good to have this in the back of our mind.
Yes, okay, thanks. That's what I wanted to know. Thanks.
Just as a comment, I mean, I had someone recently tell me, well, if as many resources have been poured into usual geometrodynamic variables as to loop quantum gravity, all this could be done the same way.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I think the community as a whole needs to know that, no, there are real differences. And I thought that it's really pedagogical explanation. I might also write this up just so that the wider community knows about it. But it's really a pedagogical thing and not more than that. Okay, so now this also came up because people ask questions. And to me, by the way, the last part I had not even thought about before. And so it was interesting. Again, nothing is deep here, but it's interesting. So what about gauge invariance and Maxwell theory? So this is point number 5. Is the diffeomorphism invariance, is it very different from more familiar gauge invariance? Are there gauge invariance states on the Maxwell kinematical algebra in Minkowski space-time? So let's do this in the simplest possible way for the seminar, which is we just take the canonically conjugate pair AE, and we can decompose it into the longitudinal and transverse part. And the conjugate pairs are going to be the transverse AT and ET. I meant one of them has to be L. The pairs are going to be transverse pair and longitudinal pairs. One of the superscripts should have been L. I'm sorry about that. So these are going to be the canonically conjugate pairs. And they together generate the familiar star algebra, which I call like A here, the canonical algebra. And under gauge transformations, nothing changes except AL, and AL changes by a gradient. All other fields are unchanged. And this then, you can check, generates an automorphism on the algebra. It preserves the commutation relations because this d alpha is a multiple of identity. And therefore, we got an automorphism on the algebra. And now, we want to know, are there positive linear functional model algebra which will preserve this which will be gauge invariant, which are invariant under this automorphism? So we need the automorphism just takes a hat of L. I restore hat in order to be able to write the identity operator explicitly. So we got theta operating on a hat of L is equal to a hat of L plus d alpha times I hat. Right? I hat is just identity. Since I'm adding a multiple of identity, you can easily check that there is no positive linear functional which is invariant under this automorphism. Thus, the standard Maxwell algebra, which has not, usually we just have transverse parts, but if we have both the longitudinal and transverse parts subject to the complete canonical commutation relations, then there is no gauge invariant state on this algebra. This is surprising because naively one would have expected infinity many gauge invariant states. Now the problem associated with the longitudinal sector, this problem, because if we just ignore the longitudinal sector and just look at the transverse sector, which is gauge invariant, then of course the algebra generated just by AT and ET is gauge invariant, and this implies it obviously admits infinitely many gauge invariant states. So what can we do? Well, we have learned our lesson. What we should be doing is to construct exponentiated operators. So let us consider Maxwell's theory, the Weyl algebra. On the Weyl algebra W, the situation is very different. Since the longitudinal and the transverse mode decouple, first of all, the Weyl algebra is rather simple. The Weyl algebra is generated now by products of the Weyl operators associated with the longitudinal mode and Weyl operators associated with the transverse mode. So that just, as the point is that the Weyl operators associated with the longitudinal modes commute with those associated with the transverse modes. So the two things are the sort of the algebra factors, if you like, and we just have two factors to the algebra. And now, W, this algebra, does admit infinitely many gauge invariant states. For example, you can have, so given a general element of the algebra, is going to be a linear combination of these products of W of F of the longitudinal part and W of the transverse part. So what does this F do to it? Well, to the transverse part, we could just use a Fock state and take the expectation value of the Weyl operator, the Fock state, any Fock state, the infinity many of it. But the main problem is what do we do with the longitudinal part? Well, we know what to do with the longitudinal part. Basically, I mean, you can think about it, and there's only one possibility, and in order to make sure that it's gauge invariant, the positive linear function is gauge invariant, what we do is we say that the answer is equal to the positive linear function operating on the transverse part associated with any Fock state if FL is equal to 0 and is 0 otherwise. Now, if I did this, then basically this state is really a tensor product of any Fock state psi Fock on the transverse modes with a polymer cyclic state on the longitudinal mode. The polymer cyclic state would be basically taking values 1 and 0. So there is uniqueness result on the polymer part of the state, but the total state is not unique by infinitely many gauge invariant state, there is no problem.
Can I ask a question?
Can I just finish the transparency and then
sure.
Come back? So the interesting thing here is that that the polymer thing came up just because we wanted a completely gauge invariant state up here. Since F is discontinuous in the longitudinal part, the operators AFFL do not exist in this representation. Only their exponentiated versions, W, are well-defined. The electric operator exists, again, exactly as in loop quantum gravity. The kinematical Hilbert space H is again non-separable because of the longitudinal part. And one can solve the Gauss constraint, however. And when you solve the Gauss constraint, the longitudinal parts go away, and you're just left with the transverse part, and then the physical Hilbert space is separable. Now, in the covariant approach, this similar procedure enables one to construct the Fock representation without having indefinite inner product, and this is something that was pointed out by Thiering. I cannot find a reference. It was some preprint. I think people like Thomas Tiemann and Jurek Lewandowski might know this, and that might be a good idea to send it to at least a few of us. Carlo.
Yes, sorry, I had to reinsert the. The question is that about this uniqueness. Is it crucial the normalization of the positive linear functional, or is not that? I mean, is that the normalization that's required? For instance, if I just take the upper line of your Brown equation without if FL equals zero, resulting thing is probably non-normalizable, I suppose. But is that goes wrong, or is more than that?
No, I meant psi is supposed to, you're right. I mean, I should take a unit, a normalized state psi of Fock, basically. Because otherwise, I mean, we do want psi of identity to be equal to 1.
Right.
That is part of the definition of the positive linear function.
right. So if the positive linear function f is independent of f of fl, wouldn't this be a
no, because
still, no.
Because because fl picks up a, even if it is, doesn't depend on fl, right?
Yes.
You can't say, and the automorphism is a funny automorphism. It takes fl so to say, and the mode fl picks up a multiple of identity.
Oh, I see. So it's nothing to do with the normalization of F.
No.
It's, I see. Okay.
It is a multiple of identity. It is really linear.
Okay, thanks.
The inhomogeneous part. The fact that it's not covariant.
Yes.
Which is the homogeneous part. That is the...
Yeah. Key. Okay, thanks.
Sure. Okay, so now...
I have a question too.
Yes, Laura.
I'm a bit confused by the previous point on the previous transparency when you said there is no gauge invariant function on the space of A. Is that really a theorem? Because let's say if I take a simpler example like the rotation acting on vectors, then I would find that the expectation value vi is equal to zero. But somehow,
no, but that is because it's homogeneous.
Yeah, so but
it is the inhomogeneous piece which is making this result.
Okay, but suppose I have a finite dimensional symmetry algebra which acts non-linearly on the space. I agree. If you have non-linear pieces, but then I could still
inhomogeneous.
If it's inhomogeneous, suppose it acts inhomogeneously on my space.
Yeah.
Then I could get invariant measure by just averaging over this symmetry algebra if it's finite dimensional or finite volume. Or another way to say is that if I have an operator and I have any projection operator, which in order to construct diff invariant variables, I just have to have a projection operator from a given kinematical one to a gauge invariant one.
So I think
the average of that.
So I'm not sure where
something goes wrong.
Right. So it is really infinity-dimensional one, and what I have in the next transparency, where I give the positive linear functional, is exactly doing the gauge is group averaging, if you like. And when you do that, however, you need to use something like, you are led to a measure which is polymer-like rather than just because of infinity dimension. It's an infinity dimensional issue.
But even for the gauge invariant part, so if I take, let's say linear state g mu, which is, if you take your functional A of, expectation value of A of F, which is A mu, g mu, and g mu is just a divergence free, then I would find states in my algebra that... So it's a distributional state, but...
No. But if g mu is divergence free, then it is not A mu as a whole. You already, that is precisely the transverse part of restricting to g mu is the same as considering a transverse part of a mu.
Yes, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't mean that there is no invariant measure on the whole algebra. It means that this measure might not be strictly positive. Maybe this is the restriction you're looking for.
I wanted for the linear function. That's the statement.
Linear function that is positive but not strictly positive. It seems to me you can get that by averaging or
there might be
an issue of non-compactness. But
yes.
In the context of Young-Mills, I'm a bit confused because there I can construct a measure on the whole algebra.
Young-Mills would have taken me much longer. Some of the issues are not clear in my head, but also what I know would have taken much, much longer. So that's why it is a non-compactness that is important here.
It's the non-compactness that's important.
Yeah. Young-Mills will take me much longer. Let's discuss this later, Paul, because let me just finish, because people who want to go can go then. Okay. So I'm now point six discussion. So first I summarize. Namely, diffeomorphism invariance is an extremely powerful restriction on the kinematical algebra, both on loop quantum gravity and quantum geometry dynamics. The counterintuitive result, at least at first, and this is really why when you discuss it with other people, and it's important to emphasize that in both cases, there is no diffeomorphism invariant state on the naive star algebra generated by just the canonically conjugate variables. And there is precisely one diffeomorphism of invariant state, and this is a much, much more non-trivial result due to Lost and Fleischack, that there is precisely one diffeomorphism of invariant state on the holonomy flux algebra, U, of loop quantum gravity, and at least two on the Weyl algebra of quantum geometry dynamics, and I don't know much of, I don't have enough, any intuition, because I haven't thought much about the uniqueness issue in quantum geometry dynamics. The resulting Galfond-Niemann-Siegel representation of A is the polymer geometry in loop quantum gravity because the connections are smeared along one-dimensional edges. In turn, this leads to well-defined quantum geometry operators exhibiting natural fundamental discreteness and a rich set of solutions to the Gauss and diffeomorphism constraints. In the resulting GNS representations, either in quantum geometry dynamics, in quantum geometry dynamics, we have two possibilities. Either the metric operator is not defined, if we use a dual positive linear functional, it will just won't be defined. Or if we use the positive linear functional that I gave, it is defined, but it fails to be positive definite, even if one were to use the affine algebra like Clauder. Three-dimensional excitations of geometry, and that implies that quantization of geometric operators and the constraints seems much more difficult, and diffeomorphism constraint may not admit enough solutions. So I'm just crystallizing various things that I already mentioned. Next transparency. Now coming to the gauge theory, the Maxwell-Weyl algebra W admits infinitely many gauge invariant states. Thus, diff invariance is a much stronger requirement than the Maxwell gauge invariance. In the non-abelian theory, the Weyl algebra is really awkward, basically because this decomposition into transverse and longitudinal parts is not easily available, and much easier than use the holonomy flux algebra, which is what we have done in loop quantum gravity. We can just use the same in Young-Mills theory. And again, if I don't talk about diffeomorphism invariance, but just gauge invariance, then again, there are infinitely many gauge invariant states. For example, any gauge invariant state in our kinematical Hilbert space of loop quantum gravity would be gauge invariant. And so in Young-Mills theory, there are infinitely many such states. In the Maxwell case, there are infinitely many gauge invariant states because the algebra W has an easily identifiable subalgebra of gauge invariant, namely transverse observables. In Young-Mills case, again, we have these nice holonomies that are available to us. In loop quantum gravity, A or the quantum geometry dynamics W, they do not admit subalgebras that are of diffeomorphism invariant observables, again, in the spatially compact case. If a spatially non-compact case, then there should be interesting diff-invariant observables which are associated with the boundary. And the reason, of course, is the extreme non-locality of the gauge invariant of observables, and the solution to diffeomorphism constraints are not states on the loop quantum gravity algebra A or the quantum geometry dynamics algebra W. In all cases, the kinematical Hilbert spaces are non-separable. But the gauge invariant subspaces in the Maxwell case and the SU2 gauge and diffeomorphism Hilbert spaces in LQG can be separable. It's the kinematical ones which are non-separable, and that seems to be forced upon us by just this general diff invariance requirement. Or even gauge invariant requirement. In all cases, no operator on H corresponding to one of the canonically conjugate variables. So in all cases, for the final Hilbert space does not carry, for example, the operator A in the Maxwell case, the connection operator AAI in loop quantum gravity, and P tilde AB in quantum geometry dynamics. Thus, there are these two surprising features of our loop quantum gravity representation, namely the non-separability of the kinematical Hilbert space and that one of the canonically conjugate variables is not a well-defined operator. They seem to be rather universal consequences of the invariance requirement. Last transparency is a limitation. What we did here was we followed the royal rule by looking for a diffeomorphism invariant cyclic state. So, of course, we also use a standard algebra. But, I mean, I use the algebra that everybody has used in quantum geometry dynamics and in Yang-Mills theory. So it's not such a big assumption there. But in finding the representations of this algebra, what we did was to use GNS construction. And this was very nice because GNS construction automatically gives us a representation of the diffeomorphism group and so on, a unitary representation of the diffeomorphism group, which we can then use to solve the constraint. But the question is, can we find other interesting diffeomorphism covariant representations of U where there is no diffeomorphism invariant cyclic state? Right? In other words, in our case, we got the representation is has unitary operators corresponding to diffeomorphism, so it is diffeomorphism covariant representation. But it also has this nice feature that the basic state, the cyclic state, the fiducial or the vacuum state is diffeomorphism invariant. Maybe there are representations in which are not cyclic, which may be cyclic, but in which there is no diffeomorphism invariant state, but still the group is unitarily implemented. The cyclic property itself, I think, is not a physical restriction because every irreducible representation is in particular cyclic. But the cyclic vector, perhaps, may not be diffeomorphism invariant. So that's a question to which I do not know answer, and I'm glad that many of the lost people, as well as Fleischack, are on the phone today, so maybe they can tell us what the answer is or think about this issue. And by restricting the cyclic state to SIL, one gets a cyclic representation of this abelian part of the algebra. Then the Hilbert space is necessarily of the form that Gelfand told us, L2, Hilbert space is square integral functions on A bar with some measure. And that measure must be diffeomorphism invariant measure. So that we know. But the action of the electric field operators on the cyclic state could be different and could perhaps enlarge the representation if we don't ask that the cyclic state be diffeomorphism invariant. And still, perhaps at the end, we might have a unitary representation of the diff group without having any diffeomorphism invariant cyclic state. Or can it? I mean, if in fact it cannot, it will even strengthen further the way that we are doing loop quantum gravity. And if it, in fact, there are some representations which look physically then interesting, on which geometric operators are well defined and so on, then it might be interesting to pursue it. So this part, in response to Carlo's earlier question, is something I think is physically interesting and might actually be very useful for all of us to pursue. Okay, thank you. We have the bridge only for about 7 more minutes. So if you have discussion, let's ask the quick questions first and more detailed discussion later. Okay, no questions? No further questions? Okay, Jorge, are there any announcements?
Not at the moment.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Yes, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.